Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Even in the final frantic weeks of an election season, you might not be paying attention to the race for lieutenant governor here in Massachusetts. You might argue that ever since Tim Murray resigned from the post 15 months ago, Massachusetts has been doing just fine without a lieutenant governor. You might even ask, do we even need a lieutenant governor?
It might be easy to dismiss the position, and yet, lieutenant governors in this state often play important roles and go on to much higher office. Consider Paul Cellucci, Jane Swift, both of whom served as lieutenant governors and went on to become governors.
Or John Kerry, who went from lieutenant governor to U.S. senator to presidential candidate to secretary of state.
Or going even farther back, Calvin Coolidge, who was the state's 46th lieutenant governor, became, of course, president of the United States.
So it is worth learning about the candidates for lieutenant governor because they could end up being governor, senator, or even president one day. Today we're going to hear from Steve Kerrigan, Democratic candidate for the job, and he's running against Republican Karen Polito, who we hope to have on the show in the coming days.
Steve Kerrigan has been involved in politics and government for nearly two decades. He's a former selectman from Lancaster. Over the years, he's worked with former Boston Mayor Tom Menino, was chief of staff to former Attorney General Thomas Riley, and for more than two decades, an advisor and aide to the late Senator Kennedy. He's also president of the Massachusetts Military's Heroes Fund, a charity that helps military families. Now he's running for the state to be the next state's lieutenant governor. And Steve Kerrigan, welcome to Radio Boston. Great to have you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
It's really good. So before we talk about what you want to do as lieutenant governor, answer that basic question that we posed, because I actually think a lot of people don't know the answer to it. Do we need a lieutenant governor?
You'll be shocked to know that's not the first time I've gotten that question. I believe the answer is yes. Yeah. You know, if you talk to mayors and local elected officials and community leaders, if you talk to folks in the veterans sphere who worked tirelessly with Tim Murray, those officials and folks who had a voice in the administration, who could work within different departments, not just in their specific sphere, to get things done. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what a lieutenant governor can do for a governor. And that's what I'm going to do as a partner to Martha Coakley.
And of course, constitutionally, you know, you're the guy there should the governor for some reason not be able to serve.
Yes,
so I want to talk about what you want to do and how you see this job, because I was looking on your website and I've heard you talk. You want to revamp the office and really turn it into a sort of state ombudsman.
Yes.
Yeah. So how would that work?
Yeah, well, I think it's important that folks all across Massachusetts, in the business community, in the nonprofit world, in government at all levels, have someone they can go to when they're having an issue in state government, trying to maneuver through the morass of regulations or dealing with agencies. That's what I've done my entire career. I'm running for lieutenant governor to get government back in the business of solving problems. That's what I've done when I've worked at all levels of government and with the business community and the nonprofit world. I know I can do that as lieutenant governor. You know, who better than the number two to the governor for a business leader or a mayor or a nonprofit leader to call when they're having a difficult time? You know, at the beginning of the campaign, I met a business leader who has a company that employs over 2,000 people here in Massachusetts. He had gone to two different state agencies with the same issue, got two drastically different answers, and his project was stymied and couldn't move forward. My office and myself would work with leaders like that to make sure that we can make government work better for people, and when government needs to get out of the way, make sure we do that as well. But make sure progress is the order of the day.
You know, on your website, I mean, this is sort of what you just said. People and business owners will have a place to go to help navigate the maze of state bureaucracy and regulations. You know, the question that raises in my mind is, rather than turning to the lieutenant governor's office to do that, why not work to simplify that maze and that bureaucracy and that maze of regulations?
I don't believe it's an either or. You know, Martha and I have just laid out a comprehensive economic development plan. In that is making our Commonwealth more competitive. I've been talking about this the entire campaign. One of the things I want to do is to chair a competitiveness council that will give voice to folks all across Massachusetts to talk about ways in which we, as the Commonwealth's government and working with business and nonprofits, can make our state more competitive. Undoubtedly, one of the most critical ways is to provide a much more efficient and effective government. But we've got to make those hard choices, and we've got to have those discussions with our friends in the legislature and all across Massachusetts about how we can do it. You know, Barney Frank's fond of saying, you're not going to cut the fat of government by chopping around the edges. It's marbleized within. And we've got to find ways to trim that out, because folks are frustrated. They're really frustrated with government. We have a colossal lack of faith and trust in government. But I believe we can win it back by showing them that we respect the sacrifices that they make and giving them a government that does what it says it's going to do.
Listeners, we're talking to Steve Kerrigan. He's a Democrat running for lieutenant governor of Massachusetts. Steve Kerrigan, you're openly gay, and if elected, you'd be the first openly gay lieutenant governor in the country, I believe. So I want to ask you about that. How are your politics and views around gay marriage, LGBT issues, how do they shape your campaign for lieutenant governor?
Well, I mean, look, we're all shaped by who we are in our races and in how we conduct our business and in our daily lives. So I am somewhat shaped by that as well, just like anybody else. But, you know, I have always believed in my entire life and worked toward this in my entire career to provide equality and opportunity to everybody. You know, what I find amazing about the fact that I will be the first openly gay lieutenant governor if elected, a fact that we did not know when we started this campaign, what I find amazing is on primary day, the Democrats, who had a very good and robust primary season, where we had 11 people running statewide as opposed to the Republicans, who had their handpicked few, we had 11 great folks. The day after, when the dust had settled in the hard-fought primaries, we elected three women, one of whom is a lesbian, and we elected a gay guy. And you know what was interesting about that? What I find noteworthy about that is that it wasn't newsworthy. And that's only here in Massachusetts that things like that can be the case, because we're focused on what matters here is making sure every family has access to the same opportunities all across Massachusetts, regardless of where you grow up, your zip code, your economic status, who you love, and frankly, what you do for a living. And so that's what Martha and I are focused on, is creating equality across Massachusetts, economic equality, equality for education, making sure we can move those 17,000 kids, low-income family kids, off of the waiting list and into early childhood education, which Charlie Baker doesn't want to do. Economic equality when it comes to earned sick time, which Charlie Baker also doesn't want to do for 1.2 million workers here in Massachusetts. We believe every family should have that equality and should have that opportunity. That's what we're going to work toward as governor and lieutenant governor.
Let me ask you about Karen Pulido, your opponent, who we hope to have on the show soon. You've been critical of her. You've made the point that she supported a number of votes in the state legislature opposing gay marriage. Mm-hmm. She's since changed her position. She's running with Charlie Baker, who's regarded as a liberal on these issues. So why make this an issue?
Because a few months before she changed her position, or before she joined the Baker ticket, she received an award from Alan West, who is a Tea Party champion from Florida, where she said not even the Republican committee had a good vision for our future, but Alan West did. So my question for her, and that's why when she entered the race last year, I challenged her to debate and discuss this. She has not done that yet. I challenged her again after winning the primary, and she has not done that. My question is, when did she change her mind? There was a Globe article done in, I think, December of last year that said that she was told to change her position on it in order to join the ticket. To me, that's concerning. You pointed out at the beginning in the introduction that two out of the last three Republican governors who were elected left office. And left their lieutenant governor in charge. To me, equality isn't something you bargain away when you're getting on a ticket or running for a particular office. It's something that your core belief, and I wonder whether or not that's at her core belief. And that's why I want to debate her. I'd like to ask her that question, but she doesn't agree to debate.
Well, we'll certainly ask that question when she comes in. But here's the question I have for you about that. I mean, people do change their mind because the country evolves.
Sure.
I mean, you worked for Thomas Riley. He changed his mind on this. President Obama changed his mind on this.
Yeah. So they were very upfront about the evolution process.
Yeah.
Months before, Anthony, months before she joined the ticket, she accepted an award from someone who said that when he saw Obama 2012 bumper stickers, he thought those people were a threat to the gene pool. He also thought that 79 to 81 members of the House of Representatives were members of the Communist Party. This guy was Tea Party, Tea Party, as was Karen Pulido in 2010, by the way. And the only thing that's changed, as far as I know, since 2010 to 2014, is that the Tea Party extreme right views that she held back then are less popular now, and therefore make her a little bit less electable. And so I'd like to have the conversation with her about where that changed. You know, I understand that people do evolve on those things. Look, I'm an Irish Catholic from central Massachusetts. I understand those things, believe me. I would just like to have the honest discussion, because it's my family and my friends and families all across this country and this world that I'll never know who need leaders to stand up and fight for equality.
Let me ask you about another thing, and this is a central point in Charlie Baker's campaign to be governor. And one of the things he talks about is ending one-party rule in Massachusetts. And so You know, where I think that might resonate with some voters is the idea that we have seen a number of challenges in recent times, whether it's corruption in the state probation department, mismanagement of the health connector, very bumpy rollout of the medical marijuana clinic application process, big problems at DCF. So a good, strong manager can say, hey, you know, I can do this better. So how do you respond to that without saying, hey, the Democrats have just have done just fine. Thanks very much.
Well, I respond to it by not just saying that, by looking at the evidence, which, you know, Charlie's a very data-based guy. So let's look at the numbers. When after 16 years of divided government, as he likes to call it, of Republican governors, we were 47th in the nation in job growth and job creation. We are now at a 25-year high under Governor Patrick. Now, look, there are a lot of people who still need jobs here in Massachusetts, and that's what Martha and I are focused on with our economic plan. But we cannot ignore the fact that after 16 years, we're 47th in the nation in job growth. And then we had the worst recession since the Great Depression, and still Massachusetts under Governor Patrick and Democratic legislature came out of that faster. We grew green tech jobs. We now have 80,000 people who are working in the green tech sector, 110,000 people working in biotech. We didn't take our eye off the ball. We invested $1 billion in life sciences. We invested in how we're going to move our Commonwealth Ford and green tech stuff. So when it comes to this divided government argument, I'll also the great manager point, and you brought up DCF, and I'm glad you did. Charlie, and I listened to your last segment when you talked about the ads. Charlie put on the table his record as an HHS secretary when he was in charge of DSS, which is now DCF, and his good manager idea. He asked for the legislature for more money. They gave it to him to hire back in the 90s when an independent report said that they were at the worst possible point in DSS. Worst possible point. Kids were being endangered, all that. They had enough money to hire 127 caseworkers. He hired 18 and gave $2 million back to the legislature because he wanted to get a tax cut. I mean, it's that, to me, is not good management.
Well, of course, big debate around this whole issue of this record on the way he handled that, and we're going to be hearing a lot more about that. But I want to thank you, Steve Kerrigan, for coming in today. He's the Democratic candidate for lieutenant governor. Thank you very much for coming in. Good to meet you.
Thank you very, very much. Thanks for having me.
And listeners, we plan to hear from his Republican opponent, Karen Pulido, in the coming days.
Well, when we come back, we'll take a look at whether or not the tech world, specifically tech entrepreneurs, may be more susceptible to mental health issues. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.